Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tatam vayam natha tiroshite vai prasanna vishyakila kapa shoshanam jivema te sundara asa shobitam apasyamana varanam manoharam iti shoriritha vacha prajanam bhaktavatsala shrimvano nugraham drishya vitanvan kavishat puram katham vayam nata chiroshite tvai prasanna drishya kilata pashoshanam jive mate sundaraha sashobitam apasyamana varanam manoharam iti chauriritha vacha prajanam bhaktavatsala shrinvano nugraham drishtya vitanvan pravishat puram katam how vayam we Nātha, O Lord, Shiroshite, being abroad, almost always, Twayi, by you, Prasanna, satisfaction, Drishtya, by the glance, Akila, universe, Tapa, miseries, Shoshanam, vanquishing, Jivema, shall be able to live, Te, your Sundara, beautiful, Hasa, smiling, Shobitam, decorated, Apasyamana, without seeing, Varanam, face, Manoharam, attractive, Iti, thus, Cha, and Udirita, speaking, Vacha, words, Prajanam, of the citizens, Bhaktavatsala, kind to the devotees, Shrinvana, thus learning, Anugraham, kindness, Drishtya, by glances, Vitanvan, distributing, Ravishat, entered, Puram, Dwarka Puri. Translation. O Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. Purport. Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by Him, one cannot tolerate separation from Him. Why is this so? Because we are all eternally related with Him as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus, the sun's rays and the sun cannot be separated. The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. And as soon as the cloud is cleared, the sun rays again display their natural effulgence in the presence of the sun. Similarly, the living entities, who are molecular parts of the whole spirit, are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, illusory energy. This illusory energy, or the curtain of Maya, has to be removed. And when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. The solution is given here, and it rests on us to assimilate it or not. So, the point here is the attraction to the Lord. Once one's attracted to the Lord, then anything else becomes not attractive. So then a doubt is raised, but then how is it the living entity is very attracted by the material world? But then the principle is given that is because even though he's like the sun rays are coming from the sun, a cloud comes in between. And that cloud is Maya. So when the cloud of Maya comes, then the soul does not see his connection with the Lord. So this is the example given. And then that is concluded, therefore, if the living entity will give up Maya, then their natural attraction to Krishna can be established. Right? And then the final point is our choice. This is very important. It's our choice. It's Krishna will not force us. Right? Sometimes the idea, well, how come Krishna made us like this? Well, how come we can't just do what's right? Why it has to be someone else's fault? Right? This is the false ego. We're not to be the fools. It doesn't matter what situation, anything. We're not to be the idiots. We can never be. It's just the way the false ego is. We just can't be the idiot. So when we accept we're the idiot, so then that's being humble. Meek and humble. If we identify ourselves as meek and humble, then we can identify ourselves as the Lord's servant. Because one, there has to be some humility there to identify. But if we identify, then that comes. So we see that's actually how it works. So when we identify as Krishna's servant, then we develop this humility. We're meek and humble. Then we're able to give up what's unnecessary and accept what's necessary. Then take that full dependence on Krishna for protection and maintenance. So that's actually practically how it works. Though when we explain it, Sharanagati is given of give up what's unnecessary, accept what's necessary, then take shelter of Krishna. He's our protector, maintainer. Then we will identify as a devotee. Then we will be meek and humble. But then that keeps going and comes back around again. So that's the point, is if you identify as a devotee, only you can be meek and humble, then you can give up. So the two go together. In other words, one is intellectually performance. Right? The tattva means intellectually you are doing. We understand, okay, the material world doesn't seem to work. I'm engaged in it, you know, to the best of my ability. Of course, you know, other things could be better if other people just wouldn't get in my way. It wouldn't mess things up for me. You know, I got the great plan, but somehow or another it didn't work out, you know. Of course, if I could just figure out, you know, who's the guy that turned on the hurricane, you know, that's another thing, you know. But I can point out, you know, the people around me in my family and in the community and, you know, the government and, you know, these kind of things. You know, then there's always those, what is it, the Illuminatis, right? You know, we can catch all these guys, but we still haven't figured out, you know, who turns on and off the hurricanes and the floods and, you know, all these things that mess up our plans. But whatever. So we're going to make these things when we understand, okay, so I can't make it work, and here's a philosophy, I've heard it, it sounds pretty good. Right? I haven't been able to really find any holes in it yet. Right? That's why I'm still considering it. So then I look at it, and okay, so they say to make it work, you have to give up these things. And these people here, you know, the ones with the, you know, they wear the, you know, the how you say it, the bald heads and the bed sheets, and the ladies are all gift wrapped, and you know, all that. Okay, so then they do it, and they say they're happier. You know, they were doing what I was doing, and you know, it's working. So okay, I'll give up those things and accept all these other things. And then okay, then you know, I take, you know, what Krishna arranges, he's the protector, maintainer, and then like this, it works. So that's all intellectual. Then we start to go, okay, I'm a servant of Krishna, and I, you know, have to be humble. But then with time, the mind accepts. When the mind accepts, then we actually identify as servant of Krishna. That makes us humble. Then there's giving up what's there and that. Then the gross is easy, the subtle is there. The gross is, in one sense, the harder because it's bigger. But in the long run, it's the subtler that's more difficult. The idea that I am the controller and enjoyer. That's why Krishna is the protector, Krishna is the maintainer, right? Protector means controller. Maintainer means enjoyer. Right? I have, you know, I got. Or let's say, actually, technically it would be the other way around. Protector would be the enjoyer. And the maintainer would be the controller. Because to maintain, you have to be in control. To protect means you protect what you enjoy. Like that. So this is the idea. I'm the controller and enjoyer. Myself or of my family or my community or whatever I identify with. So if that's given up, then we can actually surrender to Krishna and see ourselves as his servant. So then this comes then with time. So then we can see, okay, so then we could see that maybe we need to consider this point, that once being attracted to him, you cannot tolerate separation. So for tolerating separation means our attraction hasn't come to this point like these residents of Dwarka or the residents of Vrindavan or Mathura. That once it's come to there, then one, nothing else is so important. So that's something that should be attractive to the mind. Because we want to be happy, we want to enjoy. I heard the other day someone is saying, yes, I heard two people the other day saying it. They just wanted to forget everything and experience this just complete love, you know, abandonment of, you know, that comes with love. True love, you know, it's just complete throw yourself in and all things like that. You know, it's like, you know, nice, we've heard about it in the books, yeah, okay. Fleeting moments are there, some people talk about it. Like that, but then, so it's something natural the soul wants. But we see as if we go around the room, we'll probably find that, you know, as one spends time in the world, that it's not so much a reality. You know, which means there's the abandonment of that, but then there's the reality of, you know, bills, and the person is a different person, and they do think they have their own opinions, and you know, you have to compromise and make it work. You got to work, you know, you've got to work out a deal. You know, so then it starts to function. So there's always the hankering for that ideal situation of complete attraction, complete attachment. But that's in Krishna. Otherwise, it's there in the books. So many great people are there. You know, so many, you know, you hear of great personalities with this great attraction. I mean, they had a big battle for 10 years. You know, the whole Greek Empire was out, you know, for one lady, you know, because she liked some guy and he liked her. But, you know, but you don't hear of them after the war. It was so great. Why isn't there a sequel? You know, why isn't there, you know, Helen of Troy in exile with, you know, Paris, you know, out in the deserts of Turkey, I think that's where they'd end up, right? You know, you don't hear about it. It's just, it doesn't exist. You know, Romeo and Juliet is great because they're both dead. You know, like that. If they had gotten married and then they're from two different families and then this one would put this on their pasta. No, no, in our family we put that on the pasta. You know, they could be killing each other, right? Someone gave me a book the other day, big fat book. It's all on Western culinary etiquette. Right? I mean, just it's down to the detail. I mean, exactly why the cup and the glass and the spoon and the fork are there. And one of the points that they make, you know, it's just a side point of why some of these rules have come up. Because you'll notice they make the point that you grow the food, there's no real ritual. You harvest it, not much ritual. You transport it, you know, you sell it, you buy it, you cook it. You know, there's not much ritual. But when you eat it, then all kinds of ritual starts. So then they point out one of the things is that when you're eating, not the Indian, but with the Western implements, that they're quite dangerous. You know, knives and forks, they're quite, you know, you could do some serious fighting with them. So unless you ritualize the meal, you know, always at a meal, there's always something. Someone wants this and someone else wants that. So you have to create something so they won't kill each other, literally, like that. So these things become... how did we get into this one? Not sure. Can't remember where we came from. Oh yeah, so giving up this sense of abandonment, we're looking for that. So all these things are great, and in the books we've heard about them. But in reality, where are they? You know? Where are they? It means we have our life, and we see that everyone may for, you know, a few months have that kind of taste. But when they get down to the reality of making relationships work, then it would appear something idyllic gets lost. You know, so then there's always that, endeavor to maintain that, you know, idyllicness in the relationship. So here is then it's seen as, actually that can only be done if it's seen as Krishna. Because only he's all attractive and always attractive. Like that. The residents of Vrindavan have been with him since time immemorial, and they haven't got sick of him yet, you know. Radharani's not off, you know, checking out other boys around, you know, Braj or... You know, I heard there's some, you know, good lookers in, you know, in the big city, you know. What's it, in Mathura? No, they're all still attracted to Krishna. And Krishna is still attracted to Radharani. Whenever they meet, even they've only not been with each other for maximum half a day. But when they meet, it's as if they haven't seen each other. They wonder, who is that? Who is that attractive person? Because Krishna is unlimited, so he's always, his glories are always expanding. And Radharani being the Swarup Shakti, therefore, she's always expanding to match the expanding Supreme Lord. So they're ever fresh. Every time they see each other, they're more attractive than they were the time before. So then he is given in the previous verse where the Dwarkavasis are saying that, O Creator of the universe, you are a mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master, and worshipable deity. By following in your footsteps, we become successful in every respect. We pray for, therefore, that you will continue to bless us with your mercy. So we see the principle is here, is that Krishna is actually everything. What it is attractive that we find in any relationship, technically, is Krishna. He's actually, that's there. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna. So those qualities of Krishna then shine through. So it's Krishna that actually is. So now, then... If that's understood, then the relationship always works. It may not have that youthful excitement of newness, because one has to remember that is an excitement of ignorance. Because one doesn't know what's on the other side. Right? It looks very attractive when you don't really know what it is, that youthful exuberance in relationship. But when they don't know really what it means to work with someone, live with someone, deal with someone day in, day out. Therefore, it's nice, right? Think about it. The boy lives at his house. His father bankrolls everything. The girl lives at her house. Her family takes care of everything. So all they have to do is somehow or another meet and enjoy the you know, the environment. They don't have to create the environment, they don't have to maintain it, they don't have to pay bills, they don't have to pay taxes, they're not responsible for anything. So there's no responsibility. So that's ignorance. Right? Because responsible means goodness. Right? And the desire for it, that hankering, then one is desire for material, so there's ignorance, but because they want to enjoy it, there's some passion. So that gives some inspiration. So it's lack of knowing what they're getting into makes it look so good. Right? But if you actually get close, then you see it's not so great. But the thing is the living entity can't function in a world where everything, I mean down to the last, you know, atom, is not so great. Because the living entity is ananda, satchidananda. So ananda must be there, happiness must be there. And happiness means relationship. Atmaram means alone. But ananda means interaction. Right? Like that. So that's the, because Krishna before he expands is known as Atmarama. So he's happy, but that's the happiness of Atmarama. Right? But when he expands, that's the ananda of rasa. Right? So that's important. It's always a relationship, either with something or with people, that creates ananda. Right? Like with things, it's a bit one-sided, of course. But so with people, it's much more efficient. So then, to create this, then how is it, okay, so now the philosophy is there, is that it's all material, this is that, it's all maya. Okay, so then either we don't get involved in relationships, but that didn't work, right? Serious cracks kind of started appearing in this method around, I mean, prominently in the society about 81, 82, right? You know, all brahmacharis moved out of the temple, all got married, you know, like that. So it kind of worked, you know, grihasthas, you know, started, you know, moving back in with their families instead of just being out preaching all the time. So that didn't work. So then an idea comes up, so it's not practical, or that's not actually what was meant, or some philosophy has to come, because as we mentioned the statement in the beginning, no one can be the fool. No one can be the idiot. So then we have a problem here, is that the scriptures are saying that material nature, there's nothing here for us. And they're saying that only with Krishna there's something. At the same time as most of our life we're spending interacting with the material energy. So now how to work this out? You know, it's because otherwise then you have one group saying, you know, the real world is the world of Maya that we have to work with. And the other is saying, no, the real world is Krishna consciousness. But at the same time is that Maya is also, there, you know, Krishna. How is it can be separate? That's Maya means that which is not. So that's what we're thinking. We're thinking that the relationship with the family or relationship with the position or relationship with, you know, between us and what we're eating, that is, it's the thing itself, or the person themselves. It's not, it's the modes of nature. And in this, it's very important, we're talking now about the gross and subtle body. We're not talking about the soul, right? The soul we'll get to in a minute here. Because relationships are based on the gross and subtle, right? One is husband and wife, not based on the soul. You know, we know Prabhupada once, I think it was in Japan, someone asked Prabhupada about soulmates. And Prabhupada just said, bogus. There are no soulmates. Right? You know? Maximally, you know, you get in the Vedas, they talk about 7 lifetimes together, and that's kind of enough, right? You know? I've even had devotees, when they read about, you know, some of these things, you know, they say, I don't know if I want to get into this, you know. Next life we'll be together. I'm not so sure. You know, so the soul is related with Krishna eternally, and the other souls in relationship to Krishna. So that's constitutional nature. So that we do have an original nature, that we have eternal relationships with the different living entities, depending upon their relationship and our service interacting with them, with Krishna. Like that. So that's we're putting that aside. Right? So what we're dealing with is the conditioned nature. That's the bewildering part, right? It's not so bewildering generally, you know, that, okay, we're in the spiritual realm, we'll have a relationship with Krishna, other devotees will be there with their relationship with Krishna, and we'll relate to each other based on that particular relationship we have with Krishna, right? Like, the gopis deal with Mother Yashoda, like she's senior, she's the mother of Krishna, so they deal in that way. With the other cowherd girls, then they're like friends. You know, with the junior ones, then they're like parents. You know, the cowherd boys, then they're friends. So in this different way, then they have their relationship, depending upon what is there. But in the material world, then we have the gross and subtle body that Krishna is saying, you know, very emphatically in Gita, is being managed by the modes of nature. Even someone is transcendental, the modes of nature are running it. So when they say be transcendental to the modes, that means we don't get caught up in the attachments and desires, you know, and the happiness and distress that the modes create. But even for the pure devotees, the modes of nature are still managing their body, gross and subtle body. But because of their consciousness, they are using that for Krishna. And to fulfill their particular desires to serve Krishna, their conditioned nature is therefore, or let's say, it may be conditioned, may not be conditioned, but whatever, the material manifestation that they have is being managed by the modes to serve Krishna, as opposed to being managed by the modes to not serve Krishna. Does that make some sense? Huh? Gunakita. Means? Above the boats, yeah. So it's just like you're in a boat in water, and you're moving around in the water, but you're not touched by the water. But you know how the water works, therefore you can move around in it. You don't know, then you may have problems. So then the devotee understands is that it's the modes of nature that create these feelings of happiness that comes from being with whoever it is, the desired relationship or interaction, or distress that comes from that. It's not actually the soul. Because the soul is just there enjoying or not enjoying the situation. Does that make sense? The child smiles and the parent is happy. That's the modes has arranged that. That the child would smile like that, we would be there to experience it. The situation is right, that we can absorb ourselves, it's not some other distraction. So therefore we can fully appreciate it. And then that interaction happens. Right? So then that was the modes of nature. And because for us, our mind has the need for this kind of emotional or physical interaction, or in that relationship, therefore, then we identify we ourselves as happy. That situation created happiness. Does that make some sense? It's a bit mechanical, but this is what's going on. So then, now the question comes: is okay? Now is it Maya? So does that mean it's Maya to do this? Point is that Maya means where Krishna is not. That's Maya. Because we can't get away from the modes of nature. We can't get away from the material elements. That's sometimes, you know, the neophyte will feel, oh, we just change everything and do everything different, then that makes it spiritual. You know? So then, you know, if I was nice to the family, now I'm not nice to the family, so it's spiritual. Or I had money before, now I don't have money, that's spiritual. Whatever, it may create an optimal situation in which we can be more conscious. Right? I had so much money, so I get distracted by the money. I get rid of the money, now I don't get distracted. But it's not having money that makes one Krishna conscious. It's just that happened to be favorable. Otherwise, how is Yudhishthira Krishna conscious when he was the emperor in Indraprastha, and the wealth that he had, Duryodhana was bewildered. Right? Duryodhana was in charge of receiving the gifts of the kings that were coming from the Rajasuya sacrifice. And he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. Means, actually, this is not a metaphor. He actually can. We see Bhima could pick up elephants and throw them like toys on other elephants. Like that. So that means you have to be strong. He's not there. He's not doing like Atlas and sweating. He just picks them up and throws them. No sweat means literally. You know? So they're very strong. So there are five people like that. Duryodhana was one. So he was in charge of moving the wealth that the kings would drop off at the, you know, the, whatever, the wealth drop off, you know, spot. And he would physically move it because you don't want to let the servants do it because they may pocket things, this and that. So he personally does it. He would get tired and have to sit down and rest because he couldn't carry anymore. Because whatever they would bring 1,000 of each. If they bring a gold chariots, they bring 1,000 chariots. They bring elephants, it's 1,000 elephants. If it's gold bricks, they bring 1,000 gold bricks. Whatever it is, it was 1,000 each. Each king would bring. So he had never seen that wealth. Couldn't imagine such stuff existed. Right? He was already the Kuru king. So they're basically undisputed kings, though not emperor. Emperor means everybody accepts, you know. But the, you know, the king there meant that others are all vassals of them, but they don't necessarily accept them as the emperor. It's a slight difference, like that. It means one is emperor means undisputed, and king means okay, maybe I don't agree, but it's advantageous or expedient to be under them. They're bigger than the other guys, so therefore. So Yudhishthira had that kind of wealth and that kind of position. He was Krishna conscious. So it's not the giving up of the wealth, but at the same time, it's not having the wealth. It's what is useful for your Krishna consciousness. So if wealth is a distraction, why have it? If it's not a distraction, use it for Krishna. So then this brings us back to the mechanics of how the conditioned nature, the modes of nature are making the gross and subtle body interact with the other gross and subtle bodies. Right? So then when they interact, then those interactions that we hold dear, when those happen, we say we're happy. And when they don't happen, then we're frustrated, we're angry, we're upset, we're distressed. Does that make sense? But the modes are carrying it out, and it's pretty arbitrary what is what. What makes one person happy makes another person upset. The same thing. So it's not, you know, it's like, I remember once someone was telling me about, you know, appreciating salad. You know, and sometimes you see, sometimes the devotees from the West come and they don't really get those things in India. And so when they get, they're very happy. But I remember once then had local boys, and one day the cook had prepared some, like, I think some sprouts or something, and created a nice salad and gave it to the boys, and they looked at it and said, I'm not a cow. What's this for? This is for, you know, this is for animals. And they wouldn't touch it. They wouldn't eat it. So this is for, you know, So, same thing. One person would be ecstatic seeing the other person. It was like, you know, the last thing in the world he'd eat. You know? So that's the principle. So then, we see here, it's simply fulfillment of the desire that's carried out by the modes. Okay, now we come to the point. Is it Maya dealing with the material energy? One, you can't not deal with it. And what's your alternative? It means go back to Godhead in this moment? That's, of course, the best alternative. Krishna says that's the first thing, first option. Become Krishna conscious the second, go back to Godhead. If you can't do that, then he says, then follow sadhana bhakti. Right? But that's the first option. The gopis did it, Muchakunda did it, the wives of the yagi brahmins did it. So there are people who did do it. So it is an option. So if you can't do that, okay, then we've got to interface with the material energy. So then in that interface, so now is it how is it that we can't function without it because of our conditioned nature? Because we've seen devotees have tried it, they gave it up, they worked hard, and then they found that these things loomed up in their mind and it took them away from how do you say it? Very dynamic full-time service and things like this. You know, from detachment, then they go to great attachment. From full service, they go to little or no service. From good sadhana, they go to little or no sadhana, like this. So, and then one is said to be practical, and the other is said to be maya. One party says it's maya, one says it's practical. So now, how to resolve? You know? So then, the key is coming here, is that one has to see Krishna in it. In other words, that smiling of the child that so much endears them to the parents, that smile is actually a reflection of Krishna's smile to Mother Yashoda. It's his potency that's attractive. It's not actually the kid. It's Krishna's potency in the kid. Right? So that's there. So then I may say, okay, then what to do? So then one can either say, okay, if it means nothing, then, and one can function on that, one has the realization, then one doesn't need to be involved in it. But if one says, okay, I understand that's the knowledge, but I don't have the vidyan, the realization, so I still have the desire, so therefore you interact with it. Right? So this is where the key comes. Some ask, you know, how long should I be in household life, or should I get married, or should I not, or when should we take vanaprast, or this is the point. When it doesn't have any meaning anymore, by realization, not by knowledge, means you shouldn't be doing anything without knowledge. Of course, the tendency is we don't want to do things with knowledge because it makes it more exciting. Because as soon as you have knowledge, it kind of takes the fun out of it. Huh? Yeah, then the mystique is gone, you know? When you actually know what's there, then, oh, I don't know. So, that element that we want to... So, once we know, we should always have knowledge, right from the beginning, what we're dealing with. Then we can see, but now the question comes, is the difference between whether renunciation is the main factor or dealing with engaging attachments in the Lord's service is the main factor, depends on whether it's knowledge or realization. Right? That's the point. Just detachment has no meaning. Right? Detachment is connected with realization. Certain of knowledge, you know that, okay, I engage in this thing, it's going to be bad for me, so I just don't do it. But the long term, it's going to be bad for me, means it keeps me in the material world, those are harder to deal with. So that takes realization. Those are given up as realization comes. But it doesn't mean that knowledge isn't there. So this is the problem. One group would say, oh, we just deal with it, but we throw out the philosophy. So then it becomes ignorance. Because otherwise it's too, they don't know scientifically how to deal with their attachments, so they throw out the philosophy. And the other deals with the philosophy, but they don't actually know the feelings that the others are going through, the difficulties that they're going through. Because for them, detachment is easy. Their attachment is to detachment, or the other's attachment is to attachment. So then you get this polarity. But that shouldn't be there. You know? It should be that one sees with knowledge, both are in knowledge, but it's just a matter of realization. If realization is there, then one doesn't need to deal. But if the situation is such that realization comes before the situation is ideal to be disconnected from it, then if you have no attachment for it, there's no need problem dealing with it. Does that make sense? Because it's supposed to be that somewhere in the Grihastha Ashram, either before Vanaprastha, and that's the impetus for Vanaprastha, or in Vanaprastha, before sannyas, that this detachment comes by realization. But that doesn't mean duties are given up. See, that's also a mistake. We think duties must be given up. No, because it doesn't matter if you have or don't have. It's whether Krishna is involved or not. Does that make some sense? So then, trying to nail down this last point of how to see Krishna in it, but at the same time, so therefore, we see Krishna in what we're doing, so we understand it's Krishna's potency, and we're interacting according to what are the instructions of Scripture. right? How they say. Like we see, Krishna comes, you know, and either he's a child and then he's embraced, he's patted on the head and smell the head like this, or, you know, Krishna's the parent, his children, he's doing that. So we understand from scripture how it works, how it functions. Right? So then that's the culture, that's the tradition. And then the Shastras then say there's certain key points you have to do. Certain duties are there. And then these others, these are the cultural tradition that the Acharyas have done this. And so by doing that, it works. So then we know how to put together the philosophy and the culture. Because the culture is where you're trying to fulfill your needs. You don't fulfill needs in philosophy. Intellectual needs, yes. But the needs of the mind, of desire and attachment, that's through culture. So that's where it's applied. Does that make some sense? So then we have the double thing is that, one, we're dealing with the situation even though we know technically it's just the modes of nature. And we try to it not be Maya, because Maya, material energy is not Maya if it's engaged in Krishna's service. It's Krishnized. It's not ideal. It's not like spiritual energy. It's not the same standard, but it's still spiritual. Right? Lesser spiritual. But it's spiritualized. So we deal with it, it's not Maya. Because we're engaging in that interaction, cultural interactions, according to the direction of scriptures. So then one could say also that it might be mechanical, but no, if it does, it gets the reaction. Just like we say, you pick up the food and put it in your mouth, then you'll taste it. You know, one can say, well, that's pretty mechanical, but taste is what you want. So follow the mechanics, you get what you want. That's the whole point. We want emotion. Emotion doesn't come just any old way. It comes when it's exchanged in a particular way. Otherwise it doesn't come. So that's the science. You follow the science, you get the emotion you look for. You follow the science, you get the money you're looking for. You follow the science, you get whatever relationships or interaction, it works. Right? You want to be a leader. You care for others. You have standards that you are consistent. You know, you be focused. You endeavor. You're not lazy. You'll be a leader. Because others don't have these qualities they're looking for. Someone who has it, they follow. You look at any leader, they had these things. Therefore, they were a leader. That's there, it happens. You commit yourself to an activity that is consistent with a value system that is there, and you include others in it. Otherwise, you don't include others, you won't be a leader. You may be a dynamic individual, you know, a maverick, you know, but you won't be a leader. A leader means he includes others. So he protects them and he cares for them. Right? So then. So if you follow the system, it works. That's the point. It's the science. So if you follow the duties that are there and the cultural interactions that are according to tradition, it works. Right? It works for the Indians that follow it. Why won't it work for everybody else? Right? It's not that, only if you're, you know, it doesn't matter where you're from. If you follow it, it works. So then the question is, okay, then I follow the duties and this and that and see Krishna, and actually that potency that I'm being attracted to is Krishna, and that interaction I'm getting from it is actually Krishna. So therefore, I should follow the duties according to please Krishna. Right? I'm getting something from the child. The child's getting something from the parent. So then the parent and the child, when they deal with each other according to the rules, they get from each other what they want. But what they're getting is Krishna. So the mood of protection and maintenance is coming from Krishna through the parent to the child, right? And that potency of the junior being taken care of and reciprocating with the senior is coming from Krishna through the child up to the parent. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So then it works. So that's why the culture is important, because it's as we've heard a million times, it's a drama. But the point is we'll say, oh, drama is bogus, oh, that's artificial. Right? Name me here who doesn't like a well-performed drama. Raise your hand. You hate dramas, well-performed or not. Just raise your hand. Go ahead. You hate them. Okay. So now, when you go to that drama, you don't know that the person who's doing it, it's not somebody's Krishna, somebody's Madhu Mangal, somebody's Radha, that they're not technically not. Right? Or you're in such illusion, you actually think they are, therefore you enjoy the drama. No, you know. And the actors, they think they are, right? You know, according to what is it? Stanislavski, then they must identify with, right? No, so then they know they're not also. But they know this is what Krishna would do in this situation. Right? So that's the whole point. If Krishna was a parent, he would do this. If Krishna was a child, he'd do this. And they would interact like this. Right? So that's why it works. Because it's actually the potencies of Krishna. So if it's Krishna, you have to deal with it as Krishna. Yeah. Does that make some sense? So therefore, it's not dry. It's actually dry if you don't do. I mean, what kind of drama would it be if the audience is, oh, it's all my, it's all nonsense, it's all made up, and the actors all say, yeah, it's all just made up. And would it be a good drama? I mean, maybe if you're into, you know, what was it called? Living theater, maybe, but other than that, then you might find that it wasn't so great. You know, so then it works. Because it is a drama. And we're wanting something that's not real. But because we're conditioned to it, Krishna has no problem. You just see Him in it. See Him either form the rules and regulations, or His potencies, or His duties. In some way or another, whatever way or combination, see it. Then it works. Okay? Then there's the last point, you know, small point we'll get to, is what about the soul? Okay, now all this we've dealt with is just the conditioning, because that soul is also a devotee of Krishna. And they're interacting in this way, you know, then especially if they're following the, you know, Krishna's direction, then that's even better, because then they are agreeing to take part in this relationship, that I get what I need from it, and able to engage that in Krishna's service, and therefore I'm able to burn it off. Right? In other words, by seeing Krishna in it, engaging in Krishna's service, according to Krishna's direction for Krishna's pleasure, you actually burn it off. So you both get what you're materially looking for, and you remove it. Right? This is something unheard of. Right? You perform karma, you'll get a temporary result. Jnana, you perform no activity, then you get liberated. So now here we're talking about, you're going to perform an activity, by performing the activity, you're going to get liberated. At the same time, you're going to get the facilities you're looking for. At the same time, if you've done it with devotion to Krishna, then you'll get bhakti, you'll go to Krishna. You'll give up both the other two. You won't care for the material benefit you've gotten, you won't care for the liberation. You'll just care for the bhakti. So that's there. So that soul is agreed to take part in this way. Therefore, they've been a great help. A well-wisher, a friend. So the bottom line, the relationships all stay. Even though in the spiritual world, they won't necessarily be the same as here. It's because one's parent and child, a husband and wife, or a friend and friend, it doesn't mean it'll be like that there. You know, but one will be there, and one there will be relationship. What it will be, I don't know. Prabhupada says in the purport, someone in a man's body may become have a female spiritual form, and someone in a female form may have a male spiritual form. That's irrelevant. But the soul then is, how do you say? Yeah. So that way, then one can see. And one can see in it, it's got the science, and it takes care of the emotions. Right? Because that's what we're trying to do. We don't want to be stupid. We don't want to ignore the philosophy. So the philosophy has to be there. So it's there. We understand we're not this body. We understand with the relationship is actually not with the soul. It's actually Krishna's potencies, all that. And then the science of it, then we follow the principles of the sadhana bhakti and the Vedic culture and all these things. And then whatever we need materially, we've gained and we're freed from. The same time is by doing that, then I've made this commitment, the other person's made that commitment, therefore the relationship works. We taste the emotional things that we were looking for. We taste the facilities we're looking for. Same time as you do have an internal relationship with that soul, maybe not in this relationship. So this is buddhi yoga. It's yoga with intelligence. Does that sound okay, Mara? Swami, was that the... Okay. Thank you. Okay, how you doing? Yes. Well, just one or two points, then we'll end the class, and then, you know, if anyone wants to stay after for discussion, then we can.
Okay, yes, so, please.
Oh, charisma. Yeah, that's interesting.
The M instead of the N.
Yeah, yeah.
There is something there that they don't know what it is. It's charisma.
Charisma, yeah.
So how do we get to that point?
How do we get to that point?
To see Krishna in everything, even though he's there.
Okay, so how to see Krishna in everything? Then one is that for anything that you want to get done anywhere, spiritual, material, first thing is desire. If the desire is there for it, and then one takes the steps to fulfill that desire according to what's given in scripture, then it will happen. Because if the desire is there and we make the endeavor, then you get result, right? So because we're not actually running it, Krishna is running it through the modes of nature, then when we desire something, we desire Krishna and we desire some result, when the soul is desiring, means this desire is coming from the soul. Just that through the medium of the intelligence and mind and false ego, then the soul finds identity. And then when things are gained or lost according to those standards, then we say we're happy or not. So that's illusory. So we're trying to see Krishna in everything. So first is the desire is there. When the desire is there, then you can try to inform yourself on what it is. In other words, contemplate, try to know, like Krishna in the Gita, he says in the 7th, 10th, and 11th chapters, and he says, what are the manifestations and potencies you can see him in? That's just an idea. So in other words, it's what is of essence, you know, in the thing, that's Krishna. Like these things, okay, the child, what is it, what is the quintessence of the relationship that you're looking for in the child? What is it you're gaining? You know, is it that they yell and scream and make your life miserable and don't do what you want to say and, you know, this and that? No. There's something that's there that one is in that relationship for. So what that is, that's Krishna. You know, that's what's Krishna. So Maya means is you don't see Krishna in it. The modes of nature don't change. Their effect on us will change. Just like you can be in a situation dealing with the material energy. No matter what the mode is controlled by, if your consciousness is in ignorance, you'll get an ignorant effect. Or if it's in passion, you get a passion effect. Goodness, you get a goodness effect. But if you're transcendental, you get a transcendental effect. So it doesn't matter. So even if the activity at work is controlled by the mode of ignorance, still you'll get a transcendental effect from it. Right? Just like you're washing your clothes, you're removing the dirt, so that's using ignorance to destroy the dirt. The mode of ignorance is destroying the dirt in the clothes. The mode of goodness is maintaining its natural thing. The desire that it should look nice or good, or that maybe the mode of passion, is that that's why you're doing it.
You have to be aware when a particular mode
It's, how do you say? Do you have to be aware of when a particular mode kicks in? Because otherwise, then, if you're not aware, does that mean you're not getting the benefit? Main thing is that start with the key points. In other words, what it is you're looking for in your relationship, in your home, in your money, your, whatever is important. It means because everybody's material life, or let's say everybody's life, has its uniqueness and what is important. So start with those. And if those you try to see, then you'll, because it's because of those you do everything else. So you can see that principle in everything else that you're doing, even though the others may be a technical detail. You know, it's just like, let's say, one has a relationship with the wife for this purpose. Right? But that principle will be there in any interaction you have with the wife or with the child, or you have money for that, any interaction with it, or the house, any interaction. Others are details of that principle. So if you catch those principles, which there's only a few, you know, if you look at what is actually meaningful to you in your life, there's only a few real things. And of that, why is it meaningful? And there's, you know, there's only some certain key points. So if you just hit those points, grasp those points, everything else you'll get. And then with time, by working with it, over the years, more and more detail will just automatically come. And the more and more detail, the more detachment will be there, the more Krishna consciousness, until it automatically turns into, you know, vanaprastha, like that. That kind of thing, that's how it works. So don't try to catch everything. Try to catch what is actually why you're actually doing it.
You say also bring the culture.
Yeah, bring the, means you follow the culture, because since it is culture, how would Krishna, if Krishna was a child, how would he want to be dealt with? You know? So that's why it's dealt in that way. That's the, so in that there's the principle of it, the mood the mother Yashoda has, then there's the external form of it. You know, so Mother Yashoda is dressing Krishna in jewels and ornaments and dhotis and chadars and turbans and all that, because that's what in detail Krishna likes. But the main thing is that motherly affection, that's the main principle, and to make them look nice and to care for them and their health, and those are the main principles. So those must be maintained. So if, you know, you're living on the North Pole, okay, then maybe you might not find, you know, see-through dhoti and chadar and, you know, to be appropriate. So then, but the same principle of that motherly affection, that has to be there. That's not there, it doesn't work. So, you know, in other words, principle has to meet principle. If those are there, then you can add detail to detail. You know? So like that, then you can get, in other words, you start the process, and it doesn't have to be elaborate. That's the thing, is depending upon one's particular intellectual interest.
You have to find out why you want to.
Yeah, main thing is why, because everybody can answer that if they think about it. It may be very simple, because the point is why is because of the mind.
So
it's going to be something emotional.
So when the why comes from only an attachment, I cannot give it out.
Yeah. Yeah, but then still, the attachment, if it translates that you get down to the bottom, it's attachment. Okay, but attachment to what? Okay, attachment is there, we have to deal with that attachment. Because by engaging attachment in Krishna's service, we'll remove the attachment. So, what is the specific of the attachment? Okay, it's attachment. Attachment to what? The attachment to feeling that I am training the child, I'm the well-wisher of the child, or is the attachment to I'm the protector of the child, you know, or it's the particular emotional exchange of happiness, or it's the emotional exchange, let's say, of intimacy, or it's the, you know, whatever it may be, because there'll be different, and there may be different combinations. But then you can pinpoint what it is. So then if you want to get those, then you have to do those activities to get it. You know, how many times you find, this is a typical thing of energy, right? And, you know, so both guys can appreciate. Something wants to be done. The boy wants to taste a particular aspect of interaction. The girl wants to taste that also, right? But in the beginning, when they come together, is that what happens immediately? No, something else has to happen first. Because that's what you want to get to. So you don't want it to happen too suddenly. You know, you got to kind of get to it this way. The boy's trying to get at it, and the girl's trying to, you know, take. She wants the taste of moving one step at a time towards. It's getting there that's important. Then you enjoy the thing. So the whole thing, the boy just wants to get to it and enjoy, you know, the taste. But the girl, is the process of getting there is also very tasteful. You know? So this way then, it goes. But then because of that, the time is limited, but the mind is thinking in unlimited, eternal. So then the time runs out, and either you don't get there, or you just get there, and then the time's up, and then there's frustration. Right? And then the voice says, well, if you wanted to do this, why didn't you do it at the beginning? Yes, I know, but... Yeah, well, that's another thing. They don't tell you that. So the point is it's how is it working? You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is even though we know, we don't just do it. So that's the thing. We try to do this, that. So that's the whole thing in the Vedic principle of focus and endeavor. It's just you focus. If that's what you want, then do that. You know, if it's like, okay, you want to spend time with the child, you know, intimately discussing something. So then when they come, create the environment that creates that so as quickly as possible, that's what's obtained. All other things aren't important, cut those out. If it's a matter of doing something together and that, you know, camaraderie, that's what's important, then create the environment that comes immediately, as soon as possible. And all other things cut out. So another grihastha, another thing's important. So they create their environment in that way. So whatever is important for you, create that environment so as quickly as possible. That's what's mainly tasted. Then by tasting it, then after a while it gets old, right? Yeah. Anything that you like, the thing you like the best in the world, you do it every day, regularly, it's normal, you can get it whenever you want, it loses its taste. That's the meaning of energy. Shakti's like that. That's why Shakti is always changing.
That's why we have to be attached to detachment.
Yeah. Well, even we have to be attached to detachment, but more than that, we have to be attached to Krishna. Because Krishna is attachment, Krishna is detachment, Krishna is everything. But the point is it's better in the material world to be... ultimately, we get detached from the material world. Even those who fully committed themselves and interacted with the material energy would at one point give it up, because there's no taste, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right? Grihastha, 12 kids or 13 kids, you know, district magistrate, you know, had all the facility, position, money, interaction that a grihastha would have, all the social life, you know, he moved with all these big guys that are all the big wigs, you know, that you hear about. Yeah, magistrate, also, just others, who was the guy? Shantiniketan, that guy? Rabindranath, his older brother, he was in that generation. Rabindranath was the kid. So he used to move with the older brother and all those people, that, you know, Vidyasagar and all these guys, you know, the guy that started the Sanskrit College in Calcutta. That was his circle of friends. So he'd move, he'd do the whole thing. But eventually at some point there's no taste in it. Therefore they just leave it all. So that's the point is... you want to leave it, so if you can leave it now, look at that seriously first. That's why Prabhupada would approach. First you look at detachment, and then only accept how much you need of attachment. Look at it. Okay, this is a detachment. Get detached from all of it, but these points here weigh on my mind. So those then I will work with. Don't add more. So that's why you always come in first from the thing of the philosophy and the detachment, because you have to know detachment materially is better than attachment. Because it will get you more. Attachment, you enjoy it, that means you're burning it. By detachment, you're gaining it. Right? Narayan Rishi create girls. You know? Because they don't have them. So the austerity of not having them, they can create them. And create better than what Indra has. But Indra is just trying to enjoy them, and so with time, his time is there and finished. And who knows if he'll have any girls to come down here and he'll want but he can't get. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the point, is when you're exercising attachment, you're losing the facility. You're exercising detachment. You're gaining it, though you don't want it. That's the thing. So detachment is better than attachment. But if attachment is there, we engage it in Krishna's service. But Prabhupada's point is, don't engage any more attachment in his service than you have to. Right? That's why he said, don't get involved in it. Narrow it as minimal as possible. That's why he said, for spiritual life, then best is one wife. According to the Vedic system, you have more than one wife, as long as you can take care of it. Prabhupada didn't want anyone with more than one wife to be living in the temple and be maintained by the temple. Temple would maintain someone with one wife. If they had two, you maintain yourself. But as far as spiritual life, one is better. Because you have attachment to a woman, okay, but keep it minimal so that both of you can focus more on spiritual life. Because otherwise, the more you expand it, the more adds in. You need money. Keep how much you need. Don't keep more. Because more means trouble. Less means trouble, but more means trouble. Whatever facility, how much cloth, how much food, how much, whatever you need, keep just what is necessary. So each individual necessary is, it may be greater or smaller. Yeah. So somebody, let's say they come from a very wealthy background, so for them, you know, minimal is more. And for someone from a very simple background, then very less is enough. Or they've come from a simple background, but there was a scarcity mentality. For them, they got to have more. Even they had little, they always want more. So they can endeavor for it. Hear the philosophy. If the philosophy gets rid of it, great. Saves you the trouble. If it doesn't, endeavor for it. Get it, then you'll see it's nothing special. And the person who has from a wealthy background may find that they're satisfied. So then they can live with less. So it's very individual. Very individual. But it's just one has to honestly look at what is there and work with it. Then you get somewhere. You know? But otherwise, if it's just left and then making up philosophies and just sentimentally dealing with the philosophy is not enough. Oh, it didn't work, or it ruined people's lives. I know once I was discussing the principle of detachment and dealing in the relationship so that you can work on the principle of duty. And then immediately someone's saying, oh, that's it, you sannyasis ruined everything, all this detachment, you're going to destroy it. What are you talking about? This is Gita, this is philosophy. Krishna was a grihastha, Arjuna was a grihastha, everyone on that battlefield was a grihastha. Was it one brahmacharya sannyasi on the battlefield? And it was meant for all of them. So, you know, hey, let's get real here. You know? Because they get something in their mind, and point is, so fear is there that there won't be enjoyment. But the point is you only enjoy when there is detachment, when there's control. You know, it's just like if I take the food and spread it all over a net, some goes in my mouth. What goes in my mouth, I enjoy. The rest of it, I won't. You know, unless of course I'm 6 months old, right? Then whatever. Because there's more to food than just taste, you know, you feel. You know. So then, those kind of things are there. Then it's there. But if you control it and everything on the plate goes in your mouth, then you get enjoyed all that. But otherwise, the kids, you know, half goes in the mouth and half on the floor, you know, and everywhere else. So that means they actually get less enjoyment out of it, technically, by volume, you know, like that. So that's the thing. Is there's this idea, if I restrict, I'm going to lose. No, but if you restrict, you gain. If you don't restrict, that's where you lose. That's the whole point. If I restrict water and keep it in a pot, I have it. I open my fingers, it's unrestricted now, then I lose it. That's the way the material energy works on every last aspect. There's nothing that falls outside the purview of this principle.
You give such a good example now. When you talk about drama, it's better to know that it's unreal, that you just appreciate to do it in the right way.
Yeah.
So then we come to life also, you know that it's not real, you know that it's but you have to do it right.
Yeah, but that's the point, you do it right. Is that the grihastha knows, everybody knows, it's not real. But if it's understood and this is the duties that the husband should be doing, you do those right, that's what the woman is looking for anyway. And she's happy. And she does what she's supposed to do. The man, that's what he's looking for anyway. He's happy. And so then they can be happy that they perform these duties to help each other. They fulfilled each other's need, and in that way they can remove it. Because the point is once in material endeavor because of need. Otherwise, if there's no need, you don't do it. Nobody does anything if they don't need it. Like that. One may say, no, I don't need this and I have to do it. No, but you need something else, therefore you have to do it. Maybe secondary instead of direct. You know, you don't want to do the work that you have at the job, but you want the money. So to get the money, you have to please the boss. The boss is pleased if you do this. So you actually want that, to do that, because you want the money. Otherwise, if you didn't want to do that, you wouldn't be in that job. You'd go to another job where you didn't have to do it. So
Krishna reciprocates.
Yeah. Yeah, Krishna will reciprocate, because the point is one will get what one's looking for. This is the thing, is that everyone's looking somewhere else. Their own idea, but it's not. Krishna is the one who knows rasa, so he knows how it works. You know? That's the way it works. You know, it's just like, okay, the child sees the parent, and the opportunity is such that they can meet each other. So therefore, if the child gets distracted and goes somewhere else, the parent won't feel that interaction. But if the child is goes in, okay, they're going to say hello to the parents sometime. Then now is the opportunity. They say it now. It works. You know, the parent also, you know, the kids just come home, this and that, and they're just busy doing something. If they just stop that, spend that moment, that 30 seconds, greet the child, that interaction's happened. Now the child, because they never stay anywhere, they'll go running off to there, and then the parent goes back to what they're doing. But if the parent, well, just let me finish this, oh, don't bother me, and that, then the interaction didn't happen. So then the work doesn't get done nicely, and, you know, one is thinking, and one's disturbed, why do they always have to bother me, why can't they understand I'm working hard, you know, like this. And then the kid is like, hey, you know, parents don't care. And so then where's the rasa? So there's just stop, it works and then it moves. That's why there's these things. They only last a short amount of time. No one can pay attention for very long. You know? Something always has to move. Does that make sense? Okay, so I think we should end now. And then if anyone wants to continue question and answer, then after. We'll just stop and then we can also continue discussions. But the class will officially end now. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gauru Rupe. Okay, so you had something? You wanted to? Hey, a little quiet. Hey, Haribol. We have ended the class early so you don't have to sit here and painfully not want to leave because the class is going on, but want to leave. So the reciprocation is you go quietly or you stay here quietly because we'll continue the discussion.
When somebody thinks, I do have the realization, but that was not.
Oh, okay. How do you decide, distinguish what's realization and not? Okay, an example is here, and then you have so many sannyasis, they take sannyasa, and after a while, then they get married. And then, before they can work through the grihastashram and then again take sannyas, they die before that.
That's what
that's, you know, spend, you're saying a few examples or something.
That's why I'm thinking one.
Okay, thinking one. Okay. So then, yeah, because realization means it's a value. Means your life and how you'll see depends upon that. Means the values can always change. There's also the element that means there's two things. Let's first just deal with what is the realization in the path case. And then another thing is whether they had or not. That's a second discussion. So then realization would mean that it's you're able to act upon it. Like that. Because the value means you act on it. It's what you want. It's your need. In other words, value becomes your prayojan. Like that. Because then you'll always act on it. So how you act is based on what your values are. And then your values, then that's based on what you understand. So because that's your need, that's your attraction, that's your attraction, your desires, that's all the sambandha. Then your need or your values, that's a prayojan. So that will then apply the activity, you know, where you have your skills, right? So, in other words, your knowledge, when that's applied, then that will give realization. Without knowledge, you can't have skills. And if skills aren't applied, you can't get values. Right? And if values are applied, then you get habit. Right? You'll have intellectual habit that you know this is what's supposed to be done, so you do it, and by applying it, you get habit. The other is when it comes to value, then that habit, that's what will last you. Right? So habits you get in both places. You know, by you get the intellectual ones by application of skills, but then you get the mind, the habit of the mind, when it comes to realization, it comes to value, then you continue to apply it, which is what you do, then those are like permanent values. So then you have to see is that you have to judge, okay, so then the person's made that commitment, then whose works, what is their reason? Okay, is the reason that it's too much, grihastha life is too much trouble? Okay, that's all right, as long as you see is I don't have a need. Right? If I have no need for grihastha life, then the trouble of grihastha life I don't need to accept. So therefore, why I should get married, since I'm not. Right? Same time as if one is married, and one comes to that understanding, it's so much trouble. And one's, you know, in the heart, one's come to realize, so one doesn't need it anymore. But the point is if you don't need it, but you're in the situation, so there's no problem if you're detached. It doesn't matter if you deal with it or don't deal with it, if you realized. Does that make sense? You can deal with it or not. And so then when it's favorable, then you'll get out. Because it may be when the realization and the time to get out don't happen at the same moment. You know, there's some duties in that are no problem to deal with. They're not going to go against your Krishna consciousness. They're not going to go against your realization. So therefore, you know, the kid grows up, or a kid gets married, or a kid does this or that, or wife this or that. And then one naturally can move on. Yeah, especially nowadays, we don't have the social backup that previously they had. That if the person took sannyas, there's a whole family community to take care of the different members of the family. Nowadays, it's kind of like everybody's on their own. So one has to be a little more aware to see that these are taken care of. Because also, previously, there was less material attachment on one sense. Emotional, yes, but the faith in material energy was less. So then they understood as soon as then the husband goes away, then the wife thinks, yeah, the material world is temporary, what's the use of all these relations? As soon as the husband goes, nothing has any taste anymore. dressing nicely, eating nicely, living nicely, none of it has to taste. So then they just automatically become weaknesses. Right? It's a matter of force. It's just the way it is. Who cares? You know, it's like, it doesn't mean anything. But nowadays, because there's still faith in material energy, then one has to make some more arrangements before going, because otherwise, then it may leave some problems. Because people think that the material energy will take care of them and make them happy. So therefore, then a little bit more attention has to be paid. You know? So then, one sees it, okay, that's there. So then it just works naturally. And then there's always the question, the wife's in the same mood, then more of the vanaprasth kind of lifestyle and more simple and detached can be there. Wife is, you know, it's still the relationship's favorable but needs more facility, then she may stay in the house. The kids, you know, the oldest children, the husband may move more or less, or the wife may spend time. Or she needs to more be in that environment, husband doesn't, then they may go their different ways. You know, so it just depends upon what need is there. Now then, on the sannyasi that they went back, so that, was it a matter of lack of realization or what? So one, it could be. That's why sometimes Prabhupada would ask, you see in the conversations many times Prabhupada would ask, why do you want to take sannyas? And sometimes they would say, no, well then people respect more and that. And then he turned to the other sannyasis and start laughing. Ah, he wants respect. You know? So then these kind of things, and they wouldn't work. If it's a matter of, oh, that's what you got to do, or that's seen as, you know, climbing the, you know, devotional ladder, or whatever it is, that this is one of the symptoms, then it would be knowledge at best, you know, and the realization may be less. If somebody's actually thought, I have no need, and why get involved? It's a trouble, or the amount of need I have is not worth the trouble, it's there, and I can function without it. In other words, the detachment is the major part. You know? Someone once told me, though I haven't come across it, Rupa Goswami mentions 60%. Because 60% is strongly on your side. You know, I mean, 60% to your advantage. Just like, let's say, in modern corporate management, it's 51%. You hold 51% of the shares. You have a majority. You have the majority. So he's mentioning 6/10. Right? So 60% means 60% the detachment is there. 40% may be attachment, but the 60 is in the prominent. Yeah, but if the attachment's in prominent, detachment's less, then it wouldn't be advisable. Like that, you have to wait until detachment is, but that's the right realization. You know, it means, in other words, it's value. So you can live it. And that living means that you can follow the culture that is there by those who traditionally follow it. You know? Let us just say, okay, the boy is a brahmachari. And he says he ain't brahmachari, women, nonsense, and my, like this. Okay, fine. Now, let us say he serves prasad. And he, in serving the Sunday feast, has to serve the line where the ladies are sitting. Now, then, serving prasad, the duty of serving prasad is it must be done with care. You don't have to emotionally interact. That's kind of a Western thing. You just have to see that what they, you know, what's not on their plate has gotten on their plate. What they need, they offer it, and if they take it, this and that. So then, you watch how he serves. If he serves everybody badly, then he's got a problem. You know, in general, as a person. You know, if he serves the men nicely, the women badly, then one can seriously doubt his claim to brahmacharya. You know, because he gets too disturbed. The attachment is too great. He can't function, so he can't perform his service. Therefore, it's better to be a grihastha.
Now you have to look at the self-made nice.
But that's because there's emotional interaction. That's what I'm saying. Is in the Indian service, you don't have that kind of interaction. It's just a matter of you're supposed to get things on the plate pleasantly and nicely. But it's not like you come up and you want some, you put on the plate, is that enough? Want some more? Like that. That's more of an untrained Western thing. So, you know, with the women, you'll get more interaction. And they're just thinking, what a jerk. But they know that they're getting what they want, you know. At least this guy's better than those other crazy brahmacharis because you get nothing. You know, with this guy, you get what you want, but, you know, he's a real dweeb, you know, whatever. But he thinks he's, you know, the women love him, you know, but, you know, they're all thinking he's such a weirdo. You know, pleasant weirdo, but a weirdo. Does that make some sense? Like that. We'll get to you. You're next. I know, but he had his question after him. Yes? He's been waiting as long as you. This boy, what's your name? No, okay. Did anybody see him raise his hand at the back there as soon as he raised his hand? He raised his hand first. He raised his hand simultaneously. I took his question. I was planning to go to his, but it went so long. Then, when we were looking around what's happening, you raised your hand. We acknowledged, and we said, because there's too many questions, we'll stop now, then we'll get around to the thing. So it's not we're ignoring him. It means he's been as long as you. I mean, if you'd like to defer, we can take her question first, you know. Ladies first. Whatever it is, that is a perception, but I'm telling you, you are 101% wrong. Yes, I like your questions because you'll say anything, you'll ask questions that no one else would dare ask. So I like your questions. But if you're going to tell me that I'm saying that there's no questions, I'm going to stop questions right now. You understand? We'll take your question first. But my point is I will not be blamed by you that you are being unfair about this. If I'm being unfair, I shouldn't be in this seat. So the point is if I'm worth asking the question, you don't say that. If you're going to accept me as an authority to answer your question, you don't say I'm being unfair. Otherwise, that means you don't accept me as an authority. Therefore, why listen to my answer? And why would I give an answer to somebody who doesn't accept me as an authority? So that's according to the culture. So the point is I would never ignore. You have to remember is that you'll come up with a question and another question and all that, and sometimes it comes around, and because it's late and your questions take a while, we have to stop and put them into this forum. Because as you'll notice here, how many people out of what was here in the class are still sitting here? And you were sitting here, I don't know if you noticed how many left at 9 o'clock. They got to go to Prashad, they got to go to the MIHE courses, this and that. So before we just go on and on and on, and many people pointed out, hey, why don't you end on time? You know? That's what we're trying. Like that. So if we look this way, you raise your hand, but I'm planning to end, it doesn't mean that we're ignoring you. You say that, but I'm telling you the reality. You can accept it or not. You don't accept it, then I won't bother with the question. You feel, but feeling isn't reality. Point is if you don't accept me saying this, how will you accept my answer? If you don't accept that I'm saying I'm not discriminating against you, means, I don't know, is anyone here? Are you in here? No, no one's here. I've discussed with others how, you know, many people say, since we're, you know, being, you know, how you say, perception here, being honest, is that they think your questions are crazy and a disturbance. It doesn't matter. It's not a problem for me. Hey, listen, you want to listen or not? You want to have an attitude and your emotions or what? So, but I tell them, no, I like her questions. Because she will ask things that no one else will ask. Everybody wants to ask the question, they won't ask it. They're too embarrassed. But you'll ask it. So that's beneficial for everybody. So I like your questions. But the point is there should be the time and the forum to answer it. Because your question is not, and it's not a yes or no answer. You know, if you want a one sentence answer, I can give it. That's no problem. But if you want a proper explanation, it takes time. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You know, so perception is not always right, because perception is through the senses. Right? So then what is the fact that you have to look at? And that fact must be seen in relationship to authority. Right? So the point is if his question in the beginning isn't answered, then I'll keep going. Okay, granted, possibly no one else does it like this. Most others I see give class, someone answers a question, and then they give just an answer and they go to the next question. But as long as for me, if there's something relevant in that question, I'll keep discussing it. Therefore, when they come up and they make comments again and again and again, now haven't you noticed you've asked questions, but then halfway through the question you'll make another point, we'll keep going? You ever noticed that? Okay. Anyone else has noticed? Yeah. Sometimes even with a groan on everybody else's face. Whatever. But it's going on. So that means if I'm doing that for you, why I wouldn't do it for someone else? So if I'm doing it for someone else, that doesn't mean I'm ignoring you. So the point is Prahlada Nrisimha's question went for basically 50 minutes. And the different aspects of it. Yeah.
I don't make a question. You please clarify my question. I want to get complete.
Complete. Yeah. Clarification.
Huh?
Oh, now you have. Okay. So that's the point. Now, because the point is you answer the question, it has to be usable. So it's theory is nice, but it has to get down to the practical. And then from that, then Conti is seeing that and ask a question on here. So then it went nicely. That makes sense? Okay, so now we can try your question. No, we'll take your question. As she said, ladies first.
I have two questions. One, the realization comes from the knowledge, or the knowledge comes from the realization?
Okay, so knowledge comes from realization, or realization from knowledge? According to the Upanishad, then realization comes from knowledge. It means the first thing you do is, the first step is knowledge. Realization is actually the third step. The first step is knowledge. The second step is applying that knowledge with the skills that go with the knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Like you have knowledge. That knowledge has an application. Does that make sense? So that's the second stage. The third stage means then is realization. So in Sanskrit they call this, the first stage is called Shravanam, where you hear. And from Shravanam you get Gyan, or knowledge. Then you have to apply that Gyan with the methods of application. That's called Manana. So why it's Manana is because it has to be contemplated how to apply it. Because right? You have the knowledge and you have the skills, but you have to see how to apply it in this situation. So that takes contemplation. So it's called manana, or you know, thinking, contemplation. So the mental speculators take it that manana simply means you just only speculate. But actually it means you apply it. Because unless you apply it, you don't really understand it. You know, you might have seen many times, let's say, you watch somebody cook. They cook a preparation. You see it. Oh, I know how to cook that. Then you go to cook it. And then, well, did they put his here, there? You can't get it because you had the knowledge, but you didn't have the application. Then when you try to cook it, and it didn't necessarily go right, then if you go back and watch them again, then you actually see, oh, that was where it was put, or this is what, or that was, you know? So that's the thing, is it going back. So therefore, with the knowledge and the application, and then by doing that, then you'll get realization. But if you have knowledge and you only speculate, like the mentis, you can't get realization. If you only apply without the knowledge, then you may get some sentimental value, but it won't be lasting. That's what's happening, let's say, in the Hindu culture, is that they have some knowledge of what, and by sentiment they do it because their parents did it. And it doesn't last. So it may last a few generations as long as the sentiment is strong. But nowadays the sentiment is going out to the street. So as soon as the street culture hits, then there's no sentiment for the family. Very minimal. So then all those traditions of the family get lost. That was Arjuna's point on Varnashankara, why he was so worried. Because Varnashankara means the street people. The street culture is the culture of the Varnashankara. And it destroys everything. You know. So that's why it's to be avoided. So by sentiment you might get it to go a generation or two if it's so well embedded. In the Western, harder. Nowadays, especially the modern. Old school, Western, maybe. But new school doesn't even last one generation, let alone to the next. So does that make sense? So realization, so if the sentiment is there, it means you apply it, but no knowledge, you'll get sentiment, you won't get realization. And if you contemplate it without applying it, you get more speculative knowledge, more theoretical knowledge, but practical knowledge you won't get. So then, but realization, it's both, it's practical and theoretical combined. That's why that level, someone who has knowledge at that level, that's called master. The second level is an expert. First level is someone who's informed. Right? You're informed, you're knowledgeable of the subject. Then you can apply the subject well yourself. That's expert. But when you understand it, where you have realization how it functions, then you can give it again to the new person. Because the expert can't give knowledge. It's hard because they know it so well, but it hasn't come to that point of mastery. The difference in skill between a master and an expert most is the same. The difference is understanding how it functions. Like that. So therefore you can teach it. When you understand how it functions, you can teach it. When you don't understand, you can do it, but you can't teach it. Does that make some sense? So therefore you end up with the sentimentalists and you end up with the mental speculators. Does that make sense? So these two, Prabhupada's always bashing the armchair speculators, you know, the Mayavadis and the academics that just speculate. They don't apply their knowledge because they won't get realization. Because they take understanding to be realization. No, you get understanding. You have knowledge. You could say this. First level, you'd have knowledge. Second level, you'd have understanding. Third level, you have realization. So the understanding comes because you apply the theory. You apply the knowledge, so you get understanding. And then continue from understanding, then you can get realization. Is knowledge coming from the books? Knowledge is coming from, means there's three sources of knowledge. The first is pratyaksha, which means it comes by observation, from the senses. The second is anumana, which means it is speculative. It is you infer something, right? You infer it. You know, this therefore that. You know, the typical example is given, you've seen a fire and it has smoke. So if you've seen the distant smoke but you don't see the fire, then you speculate that there's fire there. Like that. But you don't know, but it's the natural consequence. Shabda means authority. So that means it's either coming from the scriptures. It means it's all based on the scriptures, but we may either get it directly from the scriptures by reading it. We may hear it from guru, we may hear it from sadhus, we may hear it from other devotees. But it's based on shastra. So in other words, we start from shastra. So that's jnana. That's knowledge. Then we apply it. In other words, we take the senses and the knowledge and try to apply it. So then when we can see that knowledge in the senses, it's observable, that's realization. Right? So that's the point. So that's how you see Master Prabhupada. Kshatriya means who can take the principles of the Shastra and make them observable to someone else. Does that make sense? Means they can take it and use it in their life and they can see it. You know, like Prabhupada will say, this world is a place of misery. We never thought about it before. But then after hearing it and he tells us where, then when we go out, we look and we see, yeah, people are not happy. Like that. So that's Shrotri. So that's realization. Different levels of realization. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, realization, yeah, different levels. For us, you'd say that there's three main of that, is that, I don't know, I guess you'd have to say this. It never ends, but I'm just trying to make it something that it's practical. What I could, you could say is that there's probably, for us it's practical, where it's really useful, there's three main levels of realization. One would be the Madhyam platform, two would be the Uttam platform, that Bhava, and three would be Uttam platform, Prema. You know, because then that's in different levels of faith. Because realization means your faith in that thing deepens. Because without faith you don't act. So Prabhupada explains prema as mature faith. So that faith is mature to the point where that it's everything for you. You completely surrender to it, to Krishna and everything. But otherwise then there's a tendency that there's still something else. So then you could say that. Of course there has to be some faith to have come in. So the neophyte means some faith is there. So that means some realization is there, you know, based on the previous experience. But for it to be deep enough to it really to be fixed, then that means you need to come to the platform of Nishta. It means the anarthas have been removed to the point where one's faith in the devotional process is stronger than one's faith in material results. But still something's there, but that's why it's a lower level than the other one. Knowledge can give, yes, because that's, see, that's understanding. When knowledge is coming in the heart, that's understanding. So by manana, by contemplation, then one starts to put things together and one understands, and then from that you may get realization. Like that. So that's there. So knowledge, it's said that knowledge, the Upanishad also mentions that knowledge is gained from, in one's life, from four sources. So 25% of all the knowledge you learn is from your studies. 25% then is from the teacher. 25% from your own experience. And 25% from others' experience. So in other words, you'll get book knowledge. Then, and the teacher will give you knowledge. Their realization. And other people will give you their realization. So you have other people's realization plus the shabda, then when you apply that, you'll get your own knowledge from your own experience. So that's how the four comes. Does that make sense? Chaitaguru, yeah. He reveals. Yeah, reveal. But it may be still understanding, because unless it comes into value, then it won't go. Okay. Yeah.
Of course.
Are you a rascal devotee because you're attached to Balaram?
Okay.
Well, see. Mother Rohini was very attached to Balaram. And, you know, seemed to do her okay. Of course, you're attached to Balaram Das. Means, see, the thing is attachment is not the problem. Attachment that's not properly focused and engaged, that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Just like we're attached to eating. So technically, eating is not the problem. It's what we eat, when we eat, how much we eat, how we eat. Those are where the problems. So, in other words, attachment is not the problem. It's a matter of if that attachment is properly focused for the all-around benefit. In other words, this is the point of the whole Varnashram Pancharatrik systems, is that one person's attachment cannot get in the way of, or it cannot disturb the benefit that someone else is getting from a common attachment. Does that make sense? Okay. More gross than, okay, you have a child. You have a father, you have a mother. Both are attached to the child. So the father's dealing with the child cannot get in the way of the mother's dealing with the child. And vice versa. So that means the mother's attachment to the child is this much, and the father's attachment to the child is this much. They got a 50% overlap where there's going to be trouble. That means the mother pulls back to 50%, the father pulls back to 50%, and then it works. That's what the whole Varnashram system is to delineate. Is everybody has attachment, but your attachment has limits. Otherwise, you go into taking other people's field of attachment. That's stealing. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, you're attached and Balaram is in the temple, he's doing arti. Okay? And, you know, but you have something you want to discuss and it's very important and that, you come in and you drag him off the altar and take him out and start discussing. So that is, you can say that's attachment, right, as the mother, but it's gone beyond your limit of your right. Now you've gone into his right as an individual, as a pujari, and into the head pujari's right, and into the deity's right. So that means three other people, plus everybody else who's there, is watching the circus, unless they like it. You know, in other words, you've intruded into other people's area, and so that's not allowed. So that's what Varnashram is for, is that where the limit of your attachment's okay, but everything has its limit. The tendency is to just let it go, but as soon as you let it go, it's destructive. If it's controlled, then it's not. You know? If it's controlled, then it goes where it should go. Just like fire. If it's let go, it destroys everything. But if it's focused, you can cook with it, you can weld with it, you can, you know, light your lamps with it, you can light the room with it, you can do so many nice things with it. But it's got to be controlled. Then you get benefit from it. So attachment's never the problem. Because ultimately, attachment is what we're trying to get, but to Krishna. So attachment to the mundane, that's a problem. So therefore, we call attachment a problem. But technically, attachment's not the problem. Attachment to Krishna is what we want, but because we've attached ourselves to something that's not Krishna, therefore it's a problem. So attachment technically is not a problem. Right? Just like the material energy is not actually a problem, other than its temporariness and its facility is very bad. And it's inconvenient. Like once, generally no one thinks of Prabhupada, and someone once asked, and it's just how he felt in the material world. He said it's very inconvenient, you know, because it just doesn't function as well as the spiritual world. So for him, it was a great inconvenience to be here, you know. But for us, we think it's fine, you know. So we don't, means the attachment's not the problem. Just like the material world is not the problem, it's not seeing it in relationship to Krishna or not engaging in Krishna's service. That's the problem. Does that make sense? So that you're attached to Balaram, that's not the problem. It's just how you manifest that attachment. Is that attachment means you want to get benefit from your attachment. Otherwise you wouldn't be attached, right? It means you're attached because you get some benefit out of it, right? If you weren't getting any benefit, you wouldn't be attached, right? Yes? No? So, therefore, you're getting what your needs from that attachment, your relationship, should not in any way get in the way of his own spiritual development or others whom you have to interact with in relationship to him. Where there's a common point of interest, your interest can't override theirs. Right? Unless it's authorized by Shastra. You say, Balaram should do this, Balaram says, I should do that. But Shastra says, what you say is right. Right? Therefore, then Balaram, then yours is not stepping over the line. This is beneficial for you and him. Right? Well, what he's saying is only beneficial for him, seemingly, but not ultimately. Or it's not good for him. You know what I'm saying? So you have to find where it works. So that's science. It's not speculative. That's why tradition is so important. Because the tradition shows how others have done it. Because the scriptures say, this is what should be done, but application. Right? Let's take a very typical one. I think I've given this, discussed this before. Typical one. You know? Always a point of contention. Is the wife submissive to the husband? Right? So according to Shastra, the wife is submissive to the husband. The husband is the one leading the family. The wife is the servant. Right? Okay. Now, if you say it in that way, then it sounds like, okay, the man is whatever he says and wants and that, it just does, and the wife just has to say, he says jump, she says how high, and that's it. Right? So, and many, so, and the men go, hey, this is great, you know? And the women is kind of, well, I don't know, but I want to fit in, and it's part of the thing, and it's, you know, okay, so, okay. But it doesn't work. And then what woman's blame, you're not submissive, this, that. And then it still doesn't work. You know? So then what went wrong there? That was the knowledge, but was it applied according how the great saintly persons and Brahmins applied it? That's the point. So we look in the Bhagavatam and we look at the other places and we see how are the husbands dealing with their wives. That's the meaning. That works. Right? These aren't, you know, simple village women with no brains in the Bhagavatam. Right? It's not one. No simple village women with no brains are ever discussed in the Bhagavatam. Right? So, therefore, that's the point. That's why tradition is so important. But not for tradition's sake. It's simply because it gets the result. And the result is pleasing Krishna. So that's...
It's because we sometimes say, we are attached to Krishna, and we don't want to do the Krishna.
Yeah. So that's therefore the balance we have to see. Okay, so how did the great mothers deal with their children? How do other senior devotees deal that they're getting a good result? You know, you don't have to follow or listen to somebody who doesn't get a good result. You know, the kids are crazy, they don't have a good relationship, they're fighting like cats and dogs, so you don't need to listen to their advice on how to take care of children. Right? Unless what they're saying makes sense and it's what they themselves aren't doing. Because sometimes it's there. That's why it's said also that you can learn moral principles from a sinful man. Because a sinful man is doing the sinful thing and he knows better than anybody. He's a little thoughtful how bad it is. So he can tell you. Like, sometimes the best people who can talk about, you know, how you shouldn't smoke are people who do it. But they're so attached to it they can't give it up. But they know it's terrible. Don't get involved. Don't be an idiot like me. Because, you know, you get this little bit of benefit, but you get so much loss, but I've already entangled myself, I can't get out of it. So don't you get involved. So you can get from them. So if it's that kind of a thing, where they say, yeah, I did this and this with my kids, and look at how they turned out, so don't do that, you could say, well, they don't know, but they know from the inverse. It's reverse knowledge, you know, like that. But if they, but otherwise, you see, those who are doing that is good. Actually trying to how to balance the two. No, no, but this. Okay. Yeah. So that you can hear. So the point is that, you know, she's just giving some, you know, some arbitrary, how you say, example just to illuminate the subject. Like she has her son Balaram, and he's in the Gurukul, and so she knows it's best that he's in the Gurukul because then, you know, he's in men's association and he'll grow up into a man and he stays at home with the women all the time. Then things just go wrong and all that, so that's good. So she knows that's good. But at the same time, the Guru Maharaj told her that, you know, your important or most important service is her Balaram. So now then the problem comes is, it means how does she balance that, you know, the best thing for him is to be at the Gurukul, or she just, you know, leaves him and then he's at the Gurukul and she gives up that duty of, you know, taking care of the most important. So then the two have to function together, but according to tradition. So the thing is by if you are confident that the Gurukul can educate and make Balaram into a devotee and into a mature person, then your taking care of Balaram is putting him in the school. Why not? No. This is what I'm saying. First accept that point, then you can talk about other points. You understand? It means by doing that, if that's the best thing for him, that's what, just like, let's say, you want to fix your car, right? Your car broke down. So the best thing for your car is a car mechanic. Okay, so now you give the car to the mechanic. So now by the mechanic fixing your car, are you fixing your car? Yes. So even though you don't even touch the car, you're fixing the car by giving to the mechanic. Yeah? So the same thing applies. If educating your Balaram by putting him in the school, if that gets the work done, then you're doing your best job by doing that. He doesn't need something else. You understand? That's the principle. So you are doing the best for him by doing that. So you are following the order of your guru, and you are following it according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Right? Then there's other things yourself personally that whenever you meet him, that you know, how you say, you're his will wisher, because that's apparent, right? He's always a well wisher. And that what he is learning, is he understanding it, is he valuing it, is he going to use it in his own life? You know, it shouldn't be that he lives one way at the school, when he comes home then he just doesn't do any of the things at the school. It's like, hey, what's going on here? You know, they're teaching you to do this, why you're not doing that? You know, at the school he puts his own tilak on, at home you have to put it on for him. It's kind of like, hey, then why are we sending you to school? So in other words, during the educational time, the emotional needs then have to be gained through more subtle methods. You know what I'm saying? You won't gain them in the direct way that you would gain them when the child's living at home. Right? But that doesn't mean it's lost forever, because the kids grow up and they graduate. Right? And then, depending upon that, then they come back into the Grihastha ashram, and then naturally they take care of the mother. Right? Especially sons are supposed to take care of mothers. Right? Right? Daughters go somewhere else, the sons take care of mothers. So then he'll be strong. Then he'll be able to take care of you. Now you take care of him. But if you want somebody like that the whole rest of your life, I mean, it's popular. Like in Italy, it's very popular. You know, you have these 40-year-old professional guys that, you know, live at home with their mother, because no one could cook as good as their mother. And no one will take care of the house and do things. So why bother? You know, a wife can never do as good a job. You know, so you do have that. You know, like that. But at the same time as there does come a point where he has to take care of the mother. Because that works okay if the father's there. When the father's not there, then it has to be guided by the son. So do you want somebody that you have to take care of, or someone that can take care of you? That's the point. So therefore there's those years of austerity. In other words, everything is gained by austerity. So by following austerity, then you'll get something later. So it's like this. There's a small amount of time that they're being educated. Then you have the rest of the life. Right? So that's bigger. So you want, the greater you want that, then the better the quality that has to be there. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, then you don't get, like the modern is, do the modern kids, is as a principal, take care of their parents? In the modern world, in the Western world, I don't know about where you come from. Where I come from is a thing called old age homes, and that's if you're lucky. They pay the bills, but they don't want to be burdened by their parents. They get rid of them and put them in old age homes, or they live separately. In other words, they live separately as long as they can take care of themselves, and when they start, you know, falling over and slobbering on themselves, then they put them in an old age home. You know, so that's, so as a principle, they don't want to take care. Because they were living at the house, but at the same time they're not being trained in the value system, because it's very hard to train one's own child. Like traditionally in the Gurukuls, in the Vedic system, one Gurukul teacher didn't train his own child. Just like Bharadwaj and Raibya Muni, their ashrams are right next to each other. But neither of them trained their own son. Raibya Muni's son was trained by Bharadwaj, Bharadwaj's son was trained by Raibya. Because you can't train your own son. You can do better than nothing, but because of the attachment, there's certain things you just let go. You know, it's hard to be that, because the point is the relationship has been developed on a particular informality and kindness and all that. To do something very formal is very difficult. You can be in a formal situation with the parent, but the relationship is still intimate, but it becomes closed. But here is a relationship where you don't have to, there is formality in it. So in that formality, then you can deal with exactly what's wrong, because what you're dealing with, what's wrong, that's where the pain comes. The pain isn't coming and dealing with what's nice. The pain is coming when it's dealing with what's wrong. Child has one idea, you have another idea. So working that out is a problem. So the Vedic system is, the parents don't have to go through the pain of doing that. Someone else does that for you. And it's painful for the parent to do it, but it's not painful for the teacher to do it. Like that. So it's very efficient. The Vedic cultures work like that. Who can get the best job done, they do it. Like the Brahma can study and teach. They can sit and study all day. Kshatriya can't. Vaishya can't. Shudra can't. Therefore, they don't do the studying and teaching. The Brahmas do it. But people have to do art. You have to build this building. You have to make things. So that the Shudra can do all day. The Brahmin can't. Therefore, they do that. You need money. Now the Brahmin, the Kshatriya, and the Vaishya can't do that all day. The Vaishya can. All day he can think money and make money. So therefore he makes the money. And to protect things and think of the bigger picture, that the Kshatriya can do. The others don't. Or the Brahmin can think of it, but he can't do it. He can be involved in it if he's a palace priest. But otherwise the tendency is they know the theory, but they don't get involved. So therefore, what's efficient? That's what's done. You know. So that's the thing. Women raise girls all the way through. But when they have the support of the father, then they learn standards, they become stable in their emotions and all that. They have trust in men. If they have trust in men, they'll have trust in a husband, they'll have trust in a son, and most important of all, they'll have trust in God, who happens to be male. Like that. Because if they don't have trust in their father, the tendency is you'll find when push comes to shove, something goes wrong, that girl loses her faith in Krishna on the spot. Because she doesn't trust men. And Krishna's one of them. But if she trusts men, implicitly trusts men, she would implicitly trust Krishna. Her father always took care, even if situations were rough. It may not have been what I liked, but it was done, it was taken care. So therefore, it may not be nice the way I like it now, but Krishna will take care. It's the same principle. Because you're dealing with principles here. Like that. These are what you're trying to get across. So the women can take the girls all the way through with the support of men. But they directly do it. And for sons, they take care of up to five or whatever, five or five, six, seven, eight, like this. Then after that, men, boys have to be raised by men. Because men can turn boys into men. Women can't.
Huh. South America is very common. Mothers were very controlling. Wives were very controlling of the husband. They also want their kids to be educated under their father.
Yeah.
And then the man, normally when marries, has so much jealousy from the mother towards the wife.
Uh-huh.
So the mother becomes so jealous of the wife, mm-hmm. she turns down the marriage for the
wife. Oh, really? Yeah.
They want to get,
that means the boy's mother, they say, the boy's mother, when he gets married, then she gets jealous of the wife because she has more control than him, and then she has control of the grandchild, and then so they'll either knowingly or even probably unknowingly break up the marriage just for their own, because they just want control of it. So it's a, you say it's very common now because and probably if you go back in time, it wasn't because the men were more, the position was stronger.
Normally, when the mother is stronger than the husband.
Yeah, when the strong wife is stronger than the husband. You said, yeah. But probably you'll get that more now than previously because previously is then the boys were trained by men, so then they were stronger than the women, you know. But then nowadays, because they're not, you know, somebody started somewhere where they got the upper hand, and then it just starts expanding, and then it falls apart. It's going to say, you know, there at least there's some concept of family unit, you know. So there's some level. You go to some other cultures, there's even less there. But it is true. It's true. Does that make some sense? Are you getting somewhere? Yeah. So this is the science, this is what's working. So it's not a matter of see, no one's in Maya. It's not a matter of Maya that the parents are too attached or the parents are bad for the kid. It's just, it's a matter of parents are great for the kid, but another situation at this time will be better. It's just like Krishna is never bad. It's good, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So in the Vedic principle, then three persons always have to be followed. The mother, the father, and the guru. Now in this, then, at the time of training of the son, then the guru takes the prominence over the mother and father. Because he's the one that can get the work done. When the child is very young, then the mother is the prominent guru. Right? The father creates the facility in which the mother can perform her work. And the guru is seeing that, you know, what's going on, and the priests are living together, and they're taking care of the child. Right? As the child grows, then the mother's prominence starts to become less, because now they can go to the toilet themselves, they can dress themselves, they can feed themselves, they can do so many things themselves, so naturally the dependency on the mother becomes less. So at this time then, the dependency on men starts to become more, because there is this psychological similarity. You know, because here, now you have, now why that? One would wonder, well, what's the problem in them just growing up with the women and developing that mentality? Okay, one. Now, women have a tendency to drive each other nuts. Okay? Now they're driving each other nuts, but on a basically a shallow level. Right? Because woman doesn't go into an emotion any deeper than she's getting a taste out of it. As soon as something else comes up that attracts the attention, that gives an equal taste or deeper taste, immediately it changes in that nanosecond. Right? Normal for women, understandable by women, completely bewildering to men. Right? So, therefore, constantly changing, moving, and all that. But at the same time, is if that mentality that many times will be self-centered or just in the experience mode rather than I'm experiencing something nice out of it, whether it's good or not, then that can be a problem. Therefore, the men are needed to see that it's working within the principles and like that. Because once the women get adjusted to it, then what's religious and what's right is prosperous and it works, so therefore they'll be the most stickly about it. You know, the woman, it has to be done. The man's going to Mangal Arati because it's the philosophy, and this woman's going because it's nice, or if you don't do it, it's going to be bad. You know, so that's more strong than the man. But if a man focuses on anything, he'll go into it way deeper than any woman ever does. So you can imagine a man that goes the depth of a man that has the woman's mentality. Oof, really bad. Even the women won't like him. You know? So that's why there has to be a time when they pull out and they go into the man's world. The girls can stay in there because they're women. Like that. So because the field is attachment, it's not the problem for the women. The women's problem is not attachment. The women's problem is selfishness. You know, and fickleness. Right? So that's why chastity and those two. And contentment. That's the weaknesses of women. Attachment's not the problem. Like that. Because if they know what they're doing, they can balance the attachment quite nicely. No one is upset with that. If they go out of the balance, then it'll annoy, you know, any number of people. But otherwise, women being attached is not no one's complaint. It's when their attachment goes into someone else's field that it's a problem. Right? It's expected of women because it's a field, it's a mentality. So therefore, they have to be satisfied with their attachments, and they have to be chaste to their attachments. Otherwise, their attachment will go anywhere to get how much they can, because they're not satisfied. If they're satisfied, they'll stay put. Otherwise, the mind will go everywhere. Right? The men is control of the senses, because attachment's not their field. Their field is detachment, or knowledge. So when they get into the field of attachment, they go nuts. Right? Women like to deal with sensuality, but they'll deal how much is appropriate for the situation and not one bit more, because one bit more won't give the right flavor. But the man thinks that the dealing with the senses is what's the good thing, so he'll go into it more than he should. So therefore, he has to control the senses, because attachment's not his field. If man becomes overly attached, he's worse than the women. Because right? That's their place. You know, just like a dog barks, it's bad, it's okay. But if a man barks, then it's like, hey, you know, that's worse. So then that and, what is it? We have control of the senses and sensitivity. The tendency is because the knowledge, they don't get into the field of the mind, so they tend to be insensitive. So they have to be a sensitive. So in other words, their power must be applied into the field of attachment through sensitivity and control. That man, any woman, will respect. Right? And that woman who takes her attachment and it controls it, so it's focused and is satisfied, that woman, any man, will respect. So that's why these controls are put. So if where someone's weak, that's where it is. The man's strong in detachment, weak in attachment. So he has to have regulations on his attachment. Women are they're strong in their, how you say, their attachment, but weak in their detachment. When they become detached, they don't know how to regulate it. They become detached from this man, that man, and they just move from man to man to man to man because it gets considered. Because they're not satisfied. So they have to regulate that. Does that make sense? So that's why the boys, the girls can grow up in the family, but the boys can't. Like that. If you want somebody higher, if not, you'll get a nice person, but they'll be more attached because they're living in the world, the Willy's world of attachment. So they'll naturally be more attached. While if they live in the man's world, there'll be more detachment. They'll be able to approach it because if you approach attachment with detachment, you can deal with it better. You know? Like if you're too attached to something, you can't even deal with it properly. You have to be a touch detached from it to actually deal with it nicely. You know, just like, let's say, you get a new sari. If you're so attached to it, you can't even wear it. Anyone gets too close to you, or you can't sit on this, you can't even live because your attachment's too great. So it has to be balanced. If it's not at all, then you trash it. That's not good either. So it has to be a balance. Then you can use it properly. So that's the whole thing, is that balance has to be there. So if that's not there, it won't work. And if men aren't like that, then women won't be like that. Because men create the control on the women. The girls develop that because the father or some male figure created it for them. So technically, men create women. And women create sons that have the potential to become men, but men turn into men. Does that make sense? That's the circle.
It's very true in every
Russian. Yeah. Even the shooter, generally, he'll train his son, but a lot of times he'll send him away for initial training. Let's say he's a carpenter, he'll put him under an uncle or a brother for the initial training. Once he's trained, then he'll come and work with the father. Because the tendency is that he'll want to play, and that's what he's done. He's always provided. When he was little, he'd give him a block of wood, he could play with it, play with the wood shavings, or, you know, different things, nails from nails. But then when he gets bigger, then he wants to play. No, now you've got to work. So therefore, now the brother or the uncle or, you know, some other community member will train him. So that's, therefore, in the art world, then the guilds, you'll learn under somebody else in the guild, you know, in the community of artisans. Business world, you also learn under another relative. For the kshatriyas, after the training, the gurukul, the practical application, they'll learn under the rajguru and the ministers and generals. Like that. Though he's with the family and all that, he's already graduated, but he's still under their care. You know? And the Brahmin, he does his full training in the guru. So he's under somebody else. Then after that, he can go back to the family. So he goes back to the family as snapping. He's already finished. He's now ready as a full-grown person to do. But when the Kshatriya and Vaishya generally leave the school, they have to train under somebody in the field to apply their knowledge that they've got in the guru. So the finer details of the practical details of administration, the art of administration, the art of business, that they have to learn from someone else in the field. And for the shudra, then he learns only the theory and the full art he learns outside. Because art is what he's learning. And theory, they may learn, they may not learn. The best is a mother who's attached, wife who's attached, yes, but that attachment then has to be regulated so that it's within shastra and tradition. Then it's appreciated by everyone. Like that, over-attachment, nobody appreciates. And under-attachment will be seen as neglect. So the point is the Vedic knows where is the balance. Where is that attachment applied and where is it not? You know, just like, let's say, the parent is with the child in the house. They laugh, they joke, they sit, they hold on to each other, they can do whatever they want. But then they come to the temple, it's a formal atmosphere. So then how you'll touch the child, how you interact with the child, how the child will behave, how the both of you will dress, changes. And so those who change that, that will be seen as this is a nicely trained child, this is a parent who has good discipline and, you know, control and like this. And they'll be seen as a nice family. But if they act in the temple like they act in the house, then you'll say that the child's spoiled and the parent doesn't know what they're doing. And they may just say, you know, this is, you know, what's wrong with it? But there is a difference. That means then they're not very mature in their personality because they can't tell the difference. That in this relationship, in this situation, I'll behave like this, that situation like that. Like that. So then the parent's not so mature, the child will be mature in that. Then, but then if you have the inverse, is that the formality that would be there, let's say in the temple, that's what's at home, then those emotional, those subtler emotional needs won't be fulfilled either. So one has to know what goes where. So everything has its place where it can be fully manifest, and a place where it's not. Just like the husband and wife, when they're alone, they can manifest more intimacy. But when they're not alone, even though they're with their own family members, they don't manifest that intimacy. But there'll be something more than when they're out in public. Right? And then that will be even less than when they're in the temple.
That's a culture.
Yeah, that's a cultured person. So we see, so one can say, but I want to experience that. Okay, you'll experience that when nobody else is there, it's just husband and wife alone. Then you manifest it. But the problem, they want to taste it all the time, then when it does happen, not much happens. Because it's like this, you're supposed to taste, you'll get 100% taste out of it. So now you can get all that 100% at one time. Or you can spread it out through the day and everything you do and get 5% here, 10% here, 1% here. And then when you actually are alone, you'll only get, you know, your 30% instead of 100%. So that's the difference. The Vedic is, it knows what is, makes it, and it works. Right? So that's the principle. It's just like this. The women want the men around all the time. At the same time as they want them to do stuff. Right? Big problem. So, you know, it's just the idea that they're there, whatever it is, control is in it, it's there, you know? But now, if you're always around, the interaction is pleasant and nice. But it doesn't go beyond that. But now if the man goes away, and then he comes back, then the interaction is more intense. So it's not that anything was lost in the day. By the man being there, you know, 24/7, he's not going to get, the woman's not going to get any more taste out of it than if he was there in the morning, went away in the day, did the service, came back in the evening. So in other words, what would have been tasted in the day now gets split up. And so what's tasted is more intense. You know, so that's a science. Not very well known, but that's the way it works. So that's the thing, is the Vedas knowing all this is then made this social, the whole culture and the whole society, so that everybody basically at all times has an opportunity to get 100% taste in the field of their attachment. But you have to know the science of where it goes. That's the difficulty. Is that it's not a speculation that this is my idea how I should get it, because basically 6 billion people on the planet are trying that, and it's not working. So only those who are following the Vedic, then we see they're getting something more. Though, there are times when they don't get it, right? The boy and girl who are following modern thing out on the street, holding hands, walking around, the girl's half-dressed, and they're thinking, we're free, we're getting it all the time. But then when, you know, another boy is checking out, you know, his girl, then what's going on in the relationship? Or another girl's checking out her boy, then what's happening? You know, what taste are they getting there? And because they're out there doing whatever they want on the street, then when they're alone, they do the same things. What's the specialty? So, what is this freedom? Yeah, so this intensity that they're looking for, they're trying to get by time rather than by quality. So it's just, it's a matter of, it's kind of like this. Do you want to do business by volume or by markup? You know what I'm saying? So you can either sell, you know, 1,000 things for 1 rupee each. Or, yeah, or you can sell one thing with 1,000 rupee markup. Both ways you make 1,000 rupees. One, it was more focused, intense, and more complete. The other one, it's more work and it's a grind. So the modern culture is getting emotion by the, you know, 1 rupee, sell 1,000 of them. So you go through 1,000 boys, and then at the end of your lifetime, you may have gotten the taste that you would have got if you stayed with one boy your whole life. Yeah, plus you wear, it's harder to sell like that. So, but the thing is the guy who sells the volume doesn't have the knowledge of the person who sells at the big markup, unless he's doing huge volume. He's selling a million Chinese toys, but then he's not doing it. He's hiring people to do it. You know what I'm saying? So he knows the science. In other words, the one knows the science, the other one doesn't as much. You know the science, then you can get, because then you're making profit both ways. You know the science, and even when you're out in a formal situation, you can't interact much, still there's those moments of interaction. A touch, a glance, that's it. Let it carry away. You know, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. So even the moments are there, you can't make profit off them. So that's the point. It's that you know the science, then you get benefit. You don't know the science, you don't get that. And the science has come from Krishna. As Krishna mentions in the fourth chapter, it's coming from Him. You know? Third chapter, he mentions that according to His direction. The fourth chapter, you know, he says, the Vedas are coming from Him. So, I mean, third chapter. Fourth chapter, then he says, therefore, you follow those instructions that are coming from, that are given by Me. Because sometimes Krishna goes back and forth talking about God, and sometimes he says it's Me. So, third chapter say, you know, God gave us Vedas, and so one who followed, and Vedas describe sacrifice, one who performs sacrifice reaches God. So the fourth chapter says, then he makes it more direct, says one who follows the instructions given by Me, which means from the scriptures, then he'll get them. So that's the only reason to discuss in minute detail about the performance of these activities, and that's because it's connected to Krishna. Krishna's given it like this. Lord Chaitanya didn't have any problem with grihasthas being married and having children and being happy. But if they forget Krishna, then that's a problem. If the renunciate forgets Krishna, that's a problem. Point is remember Krishna, never forget. So if to remember Krishna, you need to be in a detached situation, and being in an attachment will make you forget, therefore you'll be in a detached. But if by being in a detached, you'll forget, therefore being in an attached situation, then you'll remember. It's difficult. It's natural. The first generation is always going to be more difficult. Because the ashram has not been fully tasted, but in the future it will be. Last point. I'm just saying it's the last one because then it's almost 11. What is the value of the study for condition?
Yeah, if one is still conditioned, like if he can really understand the Lord, understanding himself, he's still conditioned.
Okay. The question is how to understand. The Gita is mentioning to understand the Lord, one of the techniques is by studying oneself. So this is the meaning of self-realization. She's saying that in the second chapter, Krishna is saying, by studying, analyzing the soul, by studying the self, then you can understand the Supreme Self. Like that. So this point is, the principle is self-realization. Because if you analyze a drop, then you can understand what the ocean is. But at the same time, as you can only understand the drop if you know that it's come from the ocean. So studying ourself means we have to study God along with it. But the point is because we are ourself, we're not God. Therefore, that analyzation should come in relationship to our position and application. Does that make sense? That's the point. It means we could go on studying God, but what is it going to do for us? So we have to understand God through our position. Does that make sense? Example. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, so then he's saying that you want to understand karma. You know, he's saying giving these five. It's in the introduction. You have Ishwara. What is it? Chit Achit Ishwara, Kala, and Karma. Okay? So now, our position is we're here. You're in this room. God's in that room. So, if you understand, you know, God's a person, you're a person. Okay, so you do things in a room. That means God does things in a room. You know, so God's in a room and you're in a room. So a room works like this. It has doors, it has windows. So therefore God's room has doors and windows. You know, in other words, you'll hear the theory of God, but then you'll see it in relationship to you. He's the supreme controller. We also like to control, but we're limited controllers. So therefore that puts us in a subservient position. He's the supreme enjoyer. We also like to enjoy, but we can enjoy in connection with Him. Like the leaf on the tree. You study, you want to understand the function of the leaf, but you still have to understand the function of the tree. Otherwise you won't understand how the leaf works, because it's connected to the tree. You know? So they're the same way as we study ourselves in connection with the Lord. But it still will be focused on ourselves. So it's like the first six chapters are emphasizing the activities and knowledge in which we will act to get the Supreme. It's already been pointed out that the Supreme is something we should attain. The middle six chapters will describe who is that Supreme and what is actually gained other than liberation by serving Him. Right? Then the last six chapters will describe how we, in the performance of our duties to get the Supreme, how we can technically analyze the material world, how it functions, our mind, our intelligence, our ego, the modes of nature, the material elements, you know, the divine, demonic natures. What is technically going on in the performance of our duties? We're performing a duty in knowledge, but technically how's that functioning? What's the mechanics of it? So that gives the mechanics. So we see in all elements of God's connected. But in some, like in the middle six chapters, He's more prominently connected. Like that, because it's describing Him. In the first ones, it's describing the activities of the knowledge by which you gain Him. And the last is describing technically how that knowledge and activities are functioning so you can get Him. So we see is that in all of it, we're described, God's described, material energy is described, but just which one is more prominent? Right? First six, you're engaging the material energy. The last six is how material energy works. Yeah, middle six, God, how He works, how He's entered the material energy, how He's separate. So the two have to go together. You can't have one without the other. God means the living entities are there, because we're one of his energies. And we as an energy don't exist without God. So you have to study the two together. And that's the third verse. One of the main points in the third verse of the Bhagavatam Chaturshloki. You have to see God in everything. That means we're contemplating. So it's more giving the last six chapters. Like that. So that's the application. So in other words, perform your duties in knowledge, like that, with detachment. Right? So perform your duties, that's third chapter. In knowledge, that's fourth chapter. Combined, fifth chapter. Right? Thinking of me, sixth chapter. Right? With detachment, that's the last chapters. Right? In devotion, that's the middle chapters. Right? So that's the theme throughout the whole book. But depending upon what is the point being made, Krishna emphasizes the karma aspect, the jnana aspect, the dhyana aspect, the tattva aspect, or him as God or as a person aspect. But it's the same, he's only saying this one thing through the whole book. And then at the end it throws it all out. Are they in different stages of our conditioned nature? Basically, will all these different stages of the yoga ladder be more relevant to us at different stages in our devotional development? In over really generalized, karma yoga is in the neophyte platform, jnana yoga is in the madhyama platform, and jnana yoga is in the bhava platform. Like that. And pure ongoing bhakti, that's prema. Within that, then you'll have subdivisions. Yeah. It means because for the neophyte, the emphasis will be different, because the question is about the emphasis. So the neophyte, then their activity is more important to them, the results of activity. Therefore, karma. Then for the Madhyama Jnana, though he's performing the same activity, but for him it's not the results, not important, it's the knowledge by which he performs it. Jnana, the Uttama, then he performs the service through meditation. Right? And then for the Prema Bhakti, it's the pure Prema. Okay? So we'll end here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samavitā Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Prabhu ki.
No trouble.
Yeah, no, don't worry.
Nice hat. Great hat.
That's why you were here.
That's why I came.